PayPay.org.
Greetings. Thank you for joining Disability and Progress, where we bring you insights into ideas about and discussions on disability topics. My name is Sam. I'm the host of the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. Charlene Dahl is my research person. And tonight, we have a couple people in the studio. We have Paul Herwig. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Sam. Nice to see you again.
Oh, you are on mic, too. I'm so sorry. Try that again.
Hi, Sam. It's good to be with you again.
Thank you. And we also have Miss Braille in the studio. Hello, Braille.
Hi. How's it going?
It's going great.
Awesome.
And we're going to talk about tonight's a cabaret that's coming up, and we're going to talk about Braille's artistic endeavors and all things Braille. How's that one for you?
I like
it. And the off-kilter cabaret that will be coming up. So thank you everyone for joining me, and I want to remind people that if you would like to be on the email list, you may email me at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. that's disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. and I also like to thank John Scallon, because he's a great promoter of the show, and he's been promoting people to join my email list. Thank you, John.
Oh, shucks.
I know you said you were being ghosty, but you can run, but you cannot hide.
So. That's right.
So sorry, we're giving you airtime anyway. So I'd like to start with you, Braille, and I'd like to have you please give me a little bit of history about yourself, and how did you discover that you were an artist?
I think I was fortunate to grow up around a lot of amazing people that were able to explore their artistic nature. And so naturally, I was drawn to it at a very early age, to the point where I was posing and styling the clothing and the hair of Barbie dolls and taking pictures of them, doing photo shoots with them at an age 4. So I started cool. Young.
I was dressing my cats up then. How does that count?
Yeah, sure. Your things were alive. Mine were plastic.
I'm pretty sure they didn't. You probably got a lot less scratches on your arms from your things, and mine weren't very appreciative, but I did it anyway.
True, true.
How long have you been blind?
I would say since birth. I have ROP, retinopathy of prematurity. And so I was a premature baby, so I'm lucky and happy to be alive. So it's like, for me, it's an okay trade-off, you know. And then I was diagnosed with Stargardt's, and some people are saying that it might not be, but I was diagnosed with Stargardt's when I was in my teens.
Talk about what Stargardt's is, for people who don't know.
Oh, it's the juvenile form of macular degeneration. Oh,
okay. A lot of people are familiar with that, at least.
Right.
Yeah.
And any other visual things we should know about?
I've had double eye surgery to repair damaged detached retinas. So I almost went completely blind, and very small percentage of the blind population is what they call total or completely blind. So I call myself illegally sighted.
So what does that mean exactly? How much vision do you have?
I have no idea. I don't know. I think it varies, because for me, it's contrast is important, lighting is important, movement, and levels of pain associated with other things. So there's so many variables, it's difficult to say. But I think I can see the big E, but it looks like a B at times. So there's that.
So talk about art. What types of art do you like to play in, and what have you what have you generally been working at?
I am a spoken word artist. I do lyrics. I write lyrics. I love that. And I'm also a visual artist. I'm a legally blind visual artist. And so I do
photography. What does that mean? Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I do photography, but I also do mixed medium. So I play around with paint and, you know, I'll incorporate sand or things because I wanted to create art that you could feel.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I could experience that wasn't just a flat surface.
And you write poetry, and do you do stories too?
Short stories. I'm kind of getting that craft together. It's not the strongest for me, but spoken word, I think, is
kind. Do you have any tricks that you use? If you do photography, that's got to be a little bit tricky, making sure you have things lined up. And
I like to use photography, so I don't actually. I do some things that are kind of staged, and you know, like when I used to shoot concerts and weddings, promo kits and or press kits for bands. But for the most part, I like to catch smiles and things that I would ordinarily miss visually.
Mm-hmm.
So it's my way of seeing, and it's also kind of my middle finger to society, because I was told so much what I could and could not do by both the blind and sighted community, and art being one of those things that they said I should not and could not do. And so that made me want to do it more.
Ah, of course.
Yeah.
Must defy.
Right? All in the name of progress.
That's, fight the power.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Braille, I want to talk to you about, you know, being blind and being an artist. And what is your experience being a blind artist, basically?
I think I've in a weird way, have struggled with it because internally it's like I don't want to just be seen as a novelty or some sort of gimmick, like a blind artist. Mm. Ooh, let me check out what this person can do. I want people to actually feel my work and be impacted by my work and let that stand. But at the same time, it's a big part of who I am and how I create and the way in which I create and what I create. So it's like, obviously, and especially because I go by Braille, I'm not going to be shy about being blind. So it's kind of a thing of not being just a blind artist, but being an artist that happens to be blind.
So do you do shows with, and I get that last tag there. Do you do shows with in the quote, non-disability community as well?
I have. I've done shows with, mostly shows with people who don't have disability issues, or at least ones that you can readily see.
That's right.
You know, we
and
don't.
And so what's that like?
I think it's fun. It's, you know, because I'm learning from them and they're learning from me, and it's just people getting together that enjoy similar things, being creative. And I think it's just, sometimes I'll get the whole, like, I don't know what I would do if I ever went blind. And I'm like, you would just survive it. It's not this huge crippling thing that some people, like, theorize or feel. You know, it's like we're human beings. We want to thrive. We need to survive. And so why let that stop you?
And yet, you see, there are so many people that do.
Correct. Yes.
So it's more than just that, isn't it? It's more than just saying, no, you would work it out. Sometimes people don't.
Mm-hmm.
So you do a lot of writing.
Yes.
And so what's your favorite piece that you have written?
Oh my gosh. I don't really have favorites. I think I have moods. You know,
okay.
And so I can shift and there's a few love poems that I've written about this one particular individual, and I'll call him AC for adult crush.
Okay, that's good.
And so
we've
those,
all had some of those,
right? And so those are some of my favorite pieces because it touches on something very real, something mm-hmm. unspoken that's, you know, very real.
And what was it like writing that piece?
Difficult. Difficult in the beginning because it's one of those things where I didn't even realize how emotionally involved or how I felt tethered to this individual until I finished writing. And it was a series of pieces. And afterwards, I had someone read them to me. And I'm like, oh, wow, I'm in love, you know. And so I think there's beauty in it and acceptance in your writing. And sometimes you admit things to yourself that you verbally wouldn't say out loud, and you're willing to put that on paper, and that's kind of what happens there.
Did you ever tell AC?
No.
Aww.
He doesn't know. No, no. I think you can love someone long distance. It's okay.
And so what is it like as far as, you didn't just wake up one day and say, I'm going to be a writer. How did that come about?
Again, I will say my family. I was like 9 when I got my first personal computer, my first Apple. They really, not pushed, but acknowledged that that was something that I was into, and they helped to let me, they allowed me to grow as a writer and as an artist, which was really nice. Yeah.
And you never felt like your family was saying, you can't be an artist, you can't see.
No. In fact, my mother gifted me with a Nikon when I was in a very early age, and I went off to New York, where I was born, to hang out with relatives who they were shooting for the cover of magazines. And so I got to, play along and sort of shoot those behind the scene moments. That the artist community was really welcoming and accepting for the most part. It was the blind community, or members, some members, not all, and members of the sighted community that were older and very, they're like, oh, a blind photographer, and they would scoff and laugh at it because, to them, they were stuck in what they believe photography is and what art is, and they couldn't see anything beyond that. So they were limited in that view.
Interesting. If you had to pick a favorite writer, who would it be?
Without a doubt, Marvin Bell.
And tell me what Marvin Bell writes, sorry.
Oh, he's deceased now. He's a poet, and people should Google him. He was a poet and a professor in Iowa, I believe, and amazing writer. And my writing is nothing like his, but his work touched me deeply.
And what is it about his writing that you enjoy so much?
I got a description. It was a visual, just things that I would never notice. Even with if I were sighted, I don't think I would have noticed certain aspects of like a bush or he just has a way of weaving things together that's just impactful and beautiful and brilliant.
Cool. Well, Mr. Paul.
Hi.
I don't want you to fall asleep on me. So.
Oh, I'm not falling asleep. No, I'm just super attentive and listening to your conversation, and just like everybody at home.
I want to ask about, we have this cabaret coming up.
Yes, we do.
Tell a little bit about it.
Yeah, well, the it's called the Off-Kilter Cabaret, and the title of the cabaret is Organ Recital. And Off-Kilter is a new program that my dance and theater company, Off-Leash Area, has been developing alongside our wonderful team of artistic and organizational advisors. And Sam, you and John Scallon are two of those people, along with Amy Soloway. And we wanted to develop a program that highlighted and showcased artists who happen to have disabilities. And Off-Leash Area ran a small theater before the pandemic. And this program was a program that was supposed to premiere at that theater space. But that changed because of the pandemic. But we've been very committed to moving forward and making sure that this project happens because we believe so deeply in it. Our company has had a relationship with people, individuals, and organizations in the community, people who have disabilities, or organizations who whose mission is to serve people with disabilities, and we just really wanted to make that a larger and deeper part of what Off-Leash Area does. So we came up with this idea of the cabaret. We thought it was a very simple format to showcase several artists of different disabilities with different artistic disciplines, And Off-Leash Area as a company has always been about making space for people to bring their skills and talents to the productions that we create, to the collaborations that we develop, to the connections that we make in the community. Jennifer Isles and I, as artistic directors, have, even though we love to be on stage and we love to create our works, we really try to step back and not make our company activities about our own egos and our own selves. And so Off Kilter is very, very much a core part of what we're trying to do. Yes, and anyhow, this this cabaret, which is going to be just a blast. We have seven artists that are all very different people. People with different disabilities, people with different subject matter, and they're tackling this theme called organ recital, which is to, I guess, focus on the fact that there are artists in the community who can be defined by physical parts of their body, whether they accept those definitions or not, whether those things are imposed upon you or not, or people who embrace those things. And it's probably both alternately as you go through life, like everyone, you know, you embrace and reject aspects of yourself and just try to make do with what you have. And it's an opportunity for people to seize a part of their personhood relating to their disability and use that in a work of performance or a reading of poetry or a puppetry piece or some music or a spoken word performance as part of the cabaret. And it plays for four nights at the Tech Box, downtown Minneapolis in the Kohl Center, which is at 528 Hennepin. And it's June 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th. And times and other information are on Off-Leash Area's website, which is www.offleasharea.org. And look for the Off-Kilter page.
Any hyphens in there?
No.
All right.
No, it's all one word, offleasharea.org.
Offleasharea.org.
Yeah, and we're super excited to have Selena be a part of this, to have Braille be a part of this, excuse me. And Braille and I met years and years ago, and it's just super fun to be with her again in the same space.
So you said something that struck me interestingly, that you and Jennifer, who are the owners of this, basically, you guys are used to being on stage. What's it like stepping back and kind of watching and hoping people produce a good quality piece and helping them with that?
It's really wonderful. I mean, you know, I've always believed, and I think it's easier as an artist of age, as an artist who is now entering his 60s, I think it's really important to understand that artists aren't just people who create art. There are also people who create community in different ways. There are people who support and who give back and who lend resources and, you know, really do their part to create, you know, an interconnected infrastructure of art makers and art making in the communities that they live in. So we have another program that I'm specifically involved in called the Right Here Showcase. Mm-hmm. And it's very similar in that it's a juried selection process for artists to apply to. It's a different kind of curation in that we don't have anything to say about the art that the artists are creating who are selected to participate in the program. We believe that the best thing to do for artists is to leave them alone and let them do their thing and to not make them jump through hoops that we create to satisfy our own aesthetic agenda. So we're just there to support and to you know, do what we can in the context of the resources that we have for this program to enable them to create and present their work and find new audiences.
And one of the things were that the requirement kind of was for this one is you should have a disability. Is it the same with the Right Here Showcase?
No. The Right Here Showcase is open to any ability. There are different eligibility requirements for the Right Here Showcase. It's a program for mid-career artists who have lived in the community for X number of years and have been creating their own work for X number of years.
For
the Off-Kilter Cabaret, we were very interested in having a wide range of experiences in art making. So we have, you know, some artists who are very much emerging, others who I would say are mid-career, others who are older. So it's quite a diversity in all aspects, diversity in different kinds of abilities, diversity in artistic disciplines, diversity in race and background, geographic location. It's really quite a mix of people, and we hope it's a great foundation to keep continuing this program into the future.
Can you give us just a brief rundown a little bit on who's going to be on this Off-Kilter Cabaret?
Yes, I can. First, of course, we have Braille here, who is doing a really fascinating piece. It's, I guess, at its foundation, it's a spoken word poetry performance. But Braille is bringing some really cool aspects to the performance. I don't want to give everything away, but I would say that there are aural and other sensory aspects, the sense of smell, the sense of sight, which of course comes naturally, I think, but also lack of sight and the whole idea of expectation and how our senses, how we rely on our senses and our expectations and how those things don't line up all the time. Mm-hmm. And just beautiful written words, you know, just beautiful poems as well. We also have Atlas O'Phoenix, who is a BIPOC trans woman who is doing a performance relating to her identity. We have Daniel Riva, who is a theater practitioner, director, and playwright, and he is actually submitting a film, a performance film. Amy Salloway, who is a long-time fixture of the storytelling community in town, and Amy's doing I think what will probably be an alternately hilarious and super poignant exploration of her experience with chronic pain syndrome. Mm-hmm. Pat Samples, who is an elder in the community, and she is doing a storytelling piece. Scott Sorensen, who is a young man who is doing a puppetry performance, and Young Dance, who is, you know, a really incredible organization and company, and they do dance with an all abilities group of youth, and they're just an incredible organization for teaching youth the performing arts. I couldn't say more good things about them, and we've known several of the people who have taught there, and they're just a fabulous organization. They're also a partnering organization with Off-Leash Area on this project, and so we're super happy to have them aboard. So actually the show will be like an hour 15 with a brief intermission, and it's our first incarnation of this program, and mm-hmm. we really, really hope, you know, a lot of times the first time is the hardest, and then we've already got funding to develop the second Off-Kilter, so I'm just babbling on, but I'm a theater person, so I just talk. And so anyway, that's the program and the lineup, and we couldn't be more excited about this project.
How did you and Braille get to know each other?
Well, it's an interesting story, now that you ask. So I it's funny. We were trying to remember when we just got to the studio here to meet you, Sam. And if I recall, and Braille, you're going to have to jump in if I don't recall remember this correctly. But so Off-Leash Area was doing a show. We only do original work, so we're creating the show called Now I See You, Now I Don't. And it was about basically about an artist who goes blind. And I, like Braille, had just suffered, but I experienced a really bad retinal tear and I lost a bunch of vision. I didn't lose as much as I thought I could, so that's great. I also didn't have insurance at the time, so that was a whole other aspect of the show.
Oh, that's like mentally painful.
Yeah. And that's a whole other show for you,
yes,
Sam.
It
but
is.
So I was down at the public library, and at the time I was working with a fellow at Blind Inc., learning how to walk with a cane as research for this show. And I met Braille down in front of the Hennepin County Public Library downtown. Mm. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, this is kind of crazy, but I think I just started the conversation with her. I'm kind of like, you know, hey, you got a cane. You're blind.
Yeah, a white cane.
Can we talk about this show I'm doing? And instead of just like, you know, yelling at me or running away, which would be maybe more, the more normal response, Braille struck up a conversation with me. And we met a couple of times after that, right?
Yes. Yeah. I practically took you home.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Oh, boy.
Don't do this, kids.
But no. I think I was carrying something. And with the white cane and you're toggling and you're trying to be functional and carry something and also, you know, walk with your cane so that you don't bust your butt. And I was like, well, hey, since we're talking, why don't you help me to my apartment with my stuff? And
that's
so
he
was awesome and he did that. And we just continued to meet and speak on blindness. And we both ended up doing a show with a similar name because I had my art show around that time and it was called I See You or something like that.
That's
and so
right.
It was kind of funny because afterwards you were like, oh my gosh, you probably thought I took your...
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think it was just we were like-minded.
Yeah.
You know, we were both just dealing with some of the same stuff and finding our voice through art and
this
dealing
is
with blindness.
Interesting. You had two very similar, you know, names and whatnot, but very different with how you guys did them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a lot of. I mean, I've painted since I was a little kid, and I got into, you know, theater and performing arts later, you know, in high school. But you know, my first love was always visual art, and so we had that connection too. And so it just goes to show you, you know, you don't have to look or be the same, and you can find connections everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Braille, I'm curious, what was the most challenging type of writing piece that you did? Was it the one about AC or was there another really hard one?
I would say it was connected to AC because there was a situation that occurred that was quite ugly with another person. And not trying to... trying to find a way through that pain and through loss. And so it's you know, he was there and he was kind of like an anchor that I was drawn to even more because of his compassion and warmth during one of the hardest, most difficult times of my life in which I ended up being homeless. So, and being homeless and being a woman and being blind is so very scary.
Do you want to talk about that?
It's so very scary. Sure. I had to hide my blindness when I was doing, like, going to hotels because I didn't want to be perceived as a target. And so people would often just think that I was drunk or intoxicated or something, you know, something else because I was sort of stumbling around. But I didn't want the white cane to identify me as someone who can be hurt. And that was... I had already been robbed at this point by a bunch of guys, and so I was just trying to handle being disabled and being extra vulnerable, and that was unbelievably difficult.
Did you, like, were there was no things set in place that could help you as far as...
Oh, no.
Services?
The services were, when you're homeless, this is what's really interesting. Your services are usually suspended. And so the things that you would count on, or I would count on, like ILS, independent living skills, or just having PCAs, personal care attendants, or something, all of those services go bye-bye because now you're homeless. So you are literally on your own and fending for yourself.
And how did you get back?
I had friends. I have family, most of them out of state. It was draining on them. It was draining on me, obviously. And there was a lot of fear involved because you're like, okay, can I afford this hotel? Can I afford this motel? How long can I stay here? And economic assistance can't really assist you. It was really a challenge. And during that time period, Adult Crush, AC, again, was an anchor. And it was just...
Oftentimes, people who have visual disabilities and stuff have Social Security. Were you able to depend on that?
Yes. So I have that, but it's not enough. And, you know, when you're paying almost $100 a night...
Right.
It
goes fast.
It does. It really does.
Especially if you make like $1,000 a month. It's not right. Mm-hmm. So what was that like now when you got back? How were things different for you with your outlook on yourself and on society?
I think I look at homelessness differently, experiencing it, and the judgment does come from that, just in the act of needing help and going to people. And also, unfortunately, there are a lot of individuals that are predatorial, and so you have to kind of keep up this guard, and so I've become more distant. But you can't give up. I didn't give up. I have a home. I have some sense of stability, but after losing it, and so quickly, there's always that underlying fear of having the rug pulled from underneath you, because it's already happened once. Or happened twice, or happened however many times. You learn that what you count on, you can't count on. Except for I have faith, and I have, you know, I'm lucky to have some loved ones that were there for me, even though long distance. So, you know.
Did you write about the experience?
I have. I've not shared. I was going to speak to Paul about it, but I've not shared a lot of those things because it's so dark. Mm-hmm. And
I thought being an artist that gave you permission to be dark.
yeah.
In a sense, you know, I mean, I feel like so much of writing, not all writing, obviously, but I know a number of people who do write, and it's pretty dark.
you get to express that side of you that other people may not pay attention to or want to. And that you might not feel comfortable enough to share with them. So I think of it as similar as like when people are online and, you know, like we're all kind of behind that screen. And so people feel more comfortable oversharing and sharing on. And so for me, it's similar than like being online. And I think, and I'm online quite often, and it's like an even playing field because people don't see my disability.
Yeah. So when you are homeless, it must be like a pride-stripping type of ordeal.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get your pride back?
It's not there yet. I'm still healing from it. It's not there yet.
What kind of things are you doing to get it back?
Just going outside and realizing I have a place to go inside, and that's mine, that I can call home.
Mm-hmm.
So very simple acts. Being able to know that I'm not going to hear someone screaming in the next room, that there's that peace and that comfort that comes from having your own place. And I think getting the pride back, I wouldn't call it pride as much as it just a
confidence?
Sense of self.
Yeah.
Getting your sense of self. It's you lose yourself a bit. There's a despair that's there that I can barely touch on. I think I sent Paul pictures of me when I was crying, and it was like the ugly cry where I think things were happening with my nose. you know, and so I documented some of that because it's like, this is what my reality is. It's not glossy. It's not pretty. And that's also a part of being blind. And I when I watch or listen to like YouTubers or people speak of their disability, they're always like, hi, welcome back to my channel, and super happy. And I think that's great if that is their reality and they're covered by a family that's there and supportive and can kind of shield them from the world. But the world happens to all of us that don't have that shield, that don't have that protection. A majority of us don't have it. And so being in that state where you don't know if you're going to be able to eat, it's humbling. It's extremely humbling. But you also know that you can't depend on so-and-so for a meal because they might have motives that you don't want to get next to that person. So you have to be careful. There's just so much. And when you can't see that person, you can't see the expressions, you don't know how they're, if they're leering at you or, you know, or they're eyeing your purse. You have to go by just what you feel. If you feel like something is off, get out.
So, you know, there's something I think I disagree on. This you talk about, you know, you kind of lost yourself, but I don't know if you did, because I mean, you may have felt like you did, but I see that there's a strength that you had in order to take pictures of the ugly time. And that really is a strength. There are people who would not even be able to have that strength. Like, they'd be so bottomed out, they just wouldn't have the energy to, or the thought to even do it. Mm. And so I think that you do have more strength than you maybe see or saw at the time. Can we talk about your piece that you're going to do in the cabaret, Braille?
Sure, a little bit, without giving out...
without giving too much.
Yeah, without giving too much information. It is in regards to sensory deprivation, so just, you know...
What's it called again?
it's not really a name, but it's I see you, and it's like, how do you see me? So it's basically, the world as I see it, but like, I want to know, how do people see me? Because that's... It's kind of interesting the way that shapes the way that I see myself, given that I can't really see myself in a mirror. So I just sort of talk about blindness, and my work is just regarding the emotions. And, of course, AC, adult crush.
Yes. Why do you feel like it's so important for the audience to identify with your disability?
I think it's important because there are so many other disabilities that I didn't understand. You know, I've met people who were like wheelchair bound and those that have other issues. And it's like, what works for me, like, I need to know that edging and kind of have that, you know, that drop off so that I can know when to walk. For my cane to kind of graze the side of something when walking, but for someone in a wheelchair, they need for it to slope down in order to cross. So it's kind of like, what works for me doesn't work for another. And I felt like what works for sighted people, they don't understand what works for me. So why not get a taste of that a little?
Do you think that really does help?
I do. I think it opens up a line of communication and conversation. And I think having these are hard conversations, or easy ones, depending on who you are, that are worth having.
Right. If you have a little bit more depth to you, they might be more interesting.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about the sighted person. Well, stick around and do this show for a while, and then you'll discover a whole lot of disabilities you didn't know about.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There's just so much out there. If you could, I mean, what are your ideas of what your next endeavor is going to be? What do you think you're going to write next? Do you have plans on what you're going to try to accomplish?
Yes, I would like to kind of have a small show, just more storytelling, and where it's really personal, you know, like where people can ask questions towards the end, and we can have, again, dialogue, have those conversations in regards to blindness and just living life, you know, being a woman, having been homeless with a disability, just being open to talking about that. So I would like to have a show centered around that, and then also an art show, a visual art show, showcasing my photography as well as my paintings and other pieces.
I want to go back to the homeless thing a little. Sorry, but this is slightly intriguing to me as far as What were your friends' responses when you weren't homeless anymore? Did you know, did they treat you differently? How did that work?
I think because especially with, you know, COVID having happened and pre-COVID and all of the struggles before and after and during, people were, it was really mixed. It was like there were a few that didn't really have a response because they didn't know what to say. They were angered by what happened. But they felt powerless and helpless in it. And so those relationships became a little frayed just due to the fact that they didn't know how to communicate. They felt horrible, you know. And then I felt bad that they felt bad. So it became a thing. And then there were others that I think were just afraid that I was going to ask for money. And then there were those who wanted to fundraise and insisted on helping. I just think that all of those responses are just human. They're, you know, I don't fault anyone who distanced themselves because, again, it is painful to see somebody that you love going through something and suffering and not have the ability to stop it or help.
Do you think it was painful or just awkward?
Maybe a bit of both. I think if you have any kind of empathy, it's painful.
Did you actually lose friends?
I don't want to say that I lost friends, but I would say that I recognized who stood by me during that period of time, and so it strengthened.
Who weren't your fair weather friends? That's what I call them. Who were the true stable friends?
I'm blessed to have those. I really am.
I think there's probably not enough of those in the world.
No, but I'm lucky to have the few that I do. So, yeah.
So short stories. You said you've written some and you're working on some.
Mm-hmm.
What are they like?
It's about the journey. It's more about what I've gone through, just changing the names and a few things, but legal purposes. But it's just another way of exploring my thoughts and feelings and how I see the world.
Okay, Paul, do you want to give the info how people can find out more about the cabaret and where to go to get tickets once more, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's called the Off-Kilter Cabaret, and Off-Leash Area Dance and Theater Company is organizing and presenting this event, and it's coming up really soon. It's June 16, 17, 18, and 19 at the Tech Box Theater on the second floor of the Kohl Center at 528 Hennepin Avenue, downtown Minneapolis. So parking is going to be rotten downtown, but go to our website at offleasharea.org to get all of the information about the show. Tickets are on sale now. They're not expensive. And this will be a show like nothing anybody's ever seen in town.
And I just thought of a great way that you should plug this. So probably a lot of people are wondering what the heck they're going to do for Father's Day. The 19th is Father's Day, you know. They should probably just bring their dads to Off-Kilter Cabaret.
Absolutely.
Nice.
So, do you have any thought of what you think the next venture Off-Kilter will do is, Paul?
You know, I don't know, but I know that there will be one. We just got word recently that the Metropolitan Regional Arts Council has awarded us a grant to do some really serious development of the program, which I think will be fantastic. So we'll get the first Off-Kilter successfully completed, and then we've already got support to get down around the table and figure out how to reach more people, serve more artists, and get more audience to the show.
Well, you know, I think you should convince John to finish writing his stuff, and then he can... You're going to have to really do some convincing, though, because you got to work on him.
That would be great.
All right. So, Brill, is there anything more you'd like to share with us?
No, except for I think that Paul, he does exceptional work, he and Jennifer, and I am really... really happy to be a part of this, and I've gotten nothing but welcoming vibes from everyone that is a part of your group, your organization, and it's maybe that's helping me get my quote unquote pride back.
Right
how
on.
Did, how did you? How long did it take you to write this piece that you're going to do?
It's a series of four pieces, and they're kind of. they're together. So it's again, it's just a journey, you know. So I am sharing my journey.
All right. Well, good luck in the future, and I will be there to see the piece. So
awesome.
I'm looking forward to it, and may you have more stories. All right, Paul, is there anything you would like to share more?
Yeah, thanks for asking. It just occurred to me. You know, so we have a number of accessibility services that are going to happen at the show. There's going to be one night where we're going to have a captioning service. There's going to be a couple nights where we have ASL. And then we'll have, I think, audio description every night at the show.
Woohoo!
So, you know, again, check out the website. We're obviously, because this is a program to highlight and support our valued artists and the disability community, we're trying to make this project as accessible as possible to absolutely everybody. So if there's a service on the website that you don't see and you want to come and see the show, please contact Off-Leash Area and we will make it happen.
And do you remember what nights the caption is going on and what the ASL is going?
I do. And if you just give me one second. So let's see. So there will be audio description every night, the 16th through the 19th. There will be ASL on Friday, the 17th, and Sunday, the 19th. And there will be captioning on Saturday, the 18th.
Excellent.
So, yep. And all that information is on the website.
All right. Great. Well, thank you both for coming on. I really appreciate it. It's been great. And time went fast.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. I want to remind you again, if you want to be on the email list, you may email me at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. We'll be right back. Actually, this is it. This has been KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. This is Disability in Progress. The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. My name is Sam. I'm the host of the show. Charlene Dahl is my research team. We've been speaking with Paul Herwick from Off Leash Area and Braille, who is going to be performing her piece in the upcoming Off Kilter Cabaret. And we welcome your emails to talk about anything you'd like to talk about or suggest future topics and artists and whatnot. Thanks so much for listening. Good night.
KFAI.org.